Oak session number 16406, reel 2.
Mr. Belgrave, 2.
Well, there were only three of us at that time that had done any sea time, apart from Petty Officer, of course. And I did 48 hours on the wheel because the rest were being sick all the time. We turned around and went back to New York. 2 or 3 days later, we left again to go to Bermuda. We did arrive there. And from there, we finished up in the Mediterranean. We landed at Iran, where this small landing craft that the Yanks had was put over the side. From there, we went to Algiers, and it was before the campaign was finished in the desert, and we were taking supplies up to the desert rats and the landing them ashore there, because we were the first flotilla of LSTs out there. Later, more flotillas started to arrive, and on quite a lot of them there was a survivor from the HMS Curacao. There was Stan Farrell, Ted Wilson, there was a cook that had been on the Curacao and another one, and there's quite a few of them. I think they must have bunged us out there to get us out of the way. And then we were based on Ferryville, Lake Bizerta. And from there we did our first major invasion of Sicily. We were given a talk before we went, and they estimated we'll lose 25% of the LSTs in that invasion. Well, I think we came out very luckily, because we didn't lose any. And then we had the follow-up when we was coming backwards and forwards to North Africa, and we went into Sousse one time, and there was a train load of white flour and different provisions alongside, and we were taking the desert rats aboard. And of course they had no rations the same as us. And so as they came aboard, they raided these wagons and brought gear aboard. Well, the desert rats had no distinguishing marks. You didn't know who was a major, who was a private or what. But they all dug in the galley and had a damn good feed. Well, so I went to Sicily for the first invasion.
What did you do in the LST for the Sicily landings?
For the Sicily landing, I was a quartermaster, and then in charge of two Orlikans. And of course, we were running backwards and forwards as supplies. And then next was. Salerno was the next landing we did, which was pretty tough going, that one. We were getting bombed quite a lot. And I think one of the most frightening things was these aircraft coming across with flares at night time. You couldn't see them, but the sea was absolutely reflecting, just like daylight. Of course, they could see us, every one of us. It was touch and go one time there.
But who and what were you landing in Sicily and in Salerno? Men or vehicles?
Oh, both. The men that had the vehicles, tanks crews. On these LSTs, there were accommodation down the sides with bunks, where when you had troops aboard, they were accommodated down the sides there. And they shared the same galley as we did. I couldn't tell you the actual number, but probably 100 and 120 men, I should think, at the time.
Did you get to know which units they were from, or were you discouraged from doing so?
No. We landed the Scots Greys one period. I think that was Salerno. But we used to hope we were going to get Yanks. We landed some Yanks as well, because they used to bring all their provisions with them. And they used to say to some of the lads, "Oh, come on, let's go and have a look." And they generally used to put one fellow in charge of these provisions, which were right at the back end of the tank space. And by the time we got to sea, it was a bit loppy, of course, and being very shallow drafts, they rolled like wash tubs, I suppose. And we used to go and pick out so much stuff and take it down the engine room and hide it in the engine room until we landed them at the other side. I'll tell you how bad it was with supplies. We had no base. The Navy didn't own us. And we couldn't even get soap one period. And now at Ferryville, there was a big Yankee supply ship came in. And I took the P boat across there with the Jack Dusty and two or three more of the lads with some of the stone jars of rum. Well, for rum, you could have had the ship. And we filled up with supplies and brought those back to the LST. But we weren't very well on landing craft at all. For supplies and anything like that. The next thing we did was Anzio, which was a very, very dicey business to start with. And we were laid off there, off the harbour, because the beach wasn't very good. We did the initial landing onto the beach. And then we were laid off the harbour, waiting to go in there to go in and drop stuff. And there was a big ammunition ship just laid off there as well. And that was hit by one of the bombs. Well, I've never seen anything go as high up in the sky as that did. I mean, they didn't have a chance, any of the poor fellows aboard there. But they were all very dicey with the invasions. And then, of course, there was the time when we picked the survivors up, we picked so many of the survivors up of LST 3, 4... Anyhow, Ted Wilson was aboard it, one of the Humber Division R&VRs, and he was picked up.
This was LST 429?
429, yeah. Well, I couldn't remember this number, because it was one of the other flotillas that came in later.
What do you remember about picking them up?
Well, I was on the way when they picked him up, but I didn't know until I saw him down the mess deck that we'd got the old boy back again.
This was earlier in July 1943, when they were on their way to Sicily, by the way. This is according to Mr. Wilson's own account.
Yes. I think you better switch off.
How in general did the troops behave in these landings?
Oh, remarkably calm. I think it was at Sicily, because we hit a false beach there when we first landed, and dropped the ramp. And the first tank that went, we lost it. Saved all the men, but we hit this false beach and it went and went down. But the men got out all right. But,
which was the worst for you, Anzio or Salerno?
I think Anzio was the worst, because the beach wasn't very good there. And we were getting a lot of bombing there. They were coming over regularly into bombers, until they got an airstrip ashore. And it was a Yankee squadron, the fighter squadron that came. And they were all coloured with this Yankee squadron. And they did a good job there. But to say, we got a lot of bombing at Anzio. Well, we got bombing at all of them. And I think one of the most frightening thing at any landing was cruisers and battle wagons used to lay off and fire over our heads on shore. And the Warspite used to do quite a bit of it. And when you heard those shells whistling over the top of you, it was quite frightening. And then, of course, they got these landing craft full of rockets that they fired over to saturate the beach. Night time was the worst one. They used to drop these flares. Don't know who the other one is. Because I say, we couldn't see them, but they could see us. And actually, on landing craft, you hadn't much chance, because all you had was Oerlikons. But I do remember one time when we were going across, I can't tell you which invasion it was, this regiment came aboard and they had Bofors, and we lined up those right round the deck to act as AK-AK guns aboard the ship. And then we went into Malta one time between trips. And I always recollect in Malta, all the bomb damage was terrible. And I went up to this square in Malta, and everything was down, just rubble. And in the middle of the square, there was a crucifix. Still stood there. It hadn't been touched. Amazing. And we had a run ashore in Malta for about 4 hours, I think it was. And went back on our usual going to Italy. Yeah, it was quite a hectic time out there. We were in Naples one period, loading up. That'd be when the Anzio invasion. We loaded up there and went up to Anzio. And we hit a gale one time after leaving the beachhead at Salerno. And we made for Capri. And the weather was that bad, it blew us over the harbour wall into the basin at Capri. And so we had a couple of days in Capri. All went to see Gracie Fields' villa up there. After that, we got orders to come back to England to prepare for D-Day. And we landed in Wallsend on Tyne to do a refit. And of course, we all got leave to come home from there. We did another wangle there. It was the first time we'd seen them. We had a leave ticket that was part of pass as well, and it was green. Well, you tore one bit off to hand in when you came through, and then there was the other part you were supposed to tear off when you went back. But we used to get a ticket from Wall's End to Newcastle, which we used to come through at Newcastle, and the old Brough to Hull return, the other end. And we said, bleach these to take the writing out. And of course, it bleached the green out, so we dyed them in green ink again and wrote on where we were going. A lot of rogues were there, but you couldn't do anything else. I mean, you were only in about, I don't know what was on then, but I mean, originally we were on 2 shillings a day. We did our refit at Wall's End and then came down south. And we were based on the Isle of Wight for a while. And we came into Gosport and loaded up for D-Day.
This is still the same LST?
Pardon?
This is still the same LST?
Oh, yes, I was on the same LST all the time. So we went from Gosport, it was because it was delayed for 2 or 3 days because of bad weather, and we landed on Sword Beach. And the second trip across, we dried out, and we were laid just below Caen, and the Germans were firing at the beachhead from Caen. So we evacuated the ship until the tide came in to float us off again and came back again.
What do you remember about the actual D-Day landing on Sword Beach?
Well, I suppose things happened so quickly. You don't really remember quite much about it. All you remember is landing there, the stuff going ashore, and seeing other boats that had been trapped on the anti-ship, anti-whatever they called them, barriers on the beach. You know, there was like that. Angle line into the beach. And quite a lot of the small craft were got entangled on those. But the one thing that sticks out was seeing typhoons go across and fire their rockets out into Caen. And
one of the East Riding, East Yorkshire battalions went ashore at Sword Beach. Did you take any of those across?
I don't remember. They just loaded these people up and got them across as quickly as you could. It was one time when we were going up the Scheldt, you know, later on as the Germans were being pushed back, we went up the Scheldt, or we were going up the Scheldt, and it was landed in thick fog, and we had to anchor off. We had all these troops aboard, and we're anchored there for, oh, I don't know how many days, and everybody had to keep that quiet because you could hear the E-boats going round. And now we had to come back to Southend to pick more supplies up. And then went back out there again. But it was quite a hectic time aboard the landing craft. Yeah, we had these French colonial troops aboard, and they'd just been mechanised. And they got aboard, they had jeeps and tanks and everything. And they found, when they went round them, their commanding officer or whatever it was, the jerry cans were full of vino. There's no petrol to get ashore. Well, they had enough in their engine, you know, in their vehicles, but there'd no more petrol for when they got ashore.
Was this in the Mediterranean?
In the Mediterranean, yeah. I think, I don't know where they were chucked though, I can't remember. But, they were filthy.
What were filthy?
These French colonials. I don't know where they were, what colony they came from, but they messed all over the ship and they stunk. I think it was Vino the stunk on. But it was quite a hectic period in our lives with the landing craft. And after being aboard a light cruiser, with having a bucket to get a bath in, we had showers on the landing craft of all things, which was quite marvellous. And it never seemed to run short of water, because that was one of the first things the troops used to do when they came aboard, have a shower.
So you filled...
And then, of course, one incident while we were out in the Mediterranean, when we were sunk on the Curacao, one of the things I thought about at the time was my wife was pregnant. And one of the main things I was thinking about was getting back, surviving. Then going straight across to America, I never knew when they were born, the twins. It was eventually twins. And we didn't get any mail for months. The first mail we got was when we got to the Mediterranean. And everybody got practically a sack of mail each. And I was going through all the mail that had arrived and picked letters out. And Billy and Pat and I are quite well. And how the juice of Billy and Pat, never heard of them. And also, from America, I'd sent quite a few things for the baby that was expecting. Well, I'd only sent them for one. And I was getting all these letters, and I'd sent stuff home for a child. I was getting letters from my wife saying, could I send things for another baby? Not knowing that it was twins. I thought, what's on here? I'm supplying all the people in the area. And it appeared later on, when we did eventually land at Wall's End, that my wife's mother had sent a telegram when it had taken place, the birth of the twins. And I didn't receive it until we got to Wall's End, which was 2 years later, I suppose. When I did come home on leave from Wall's End, they walked to meet me.
Your friend Mr. Wilson's been telling me about the state of his health at the end of the war and
how
he contracted TB,
yeah.
Which he attributes to his experiences in the Navy during the war. How did your own health stand up?
Oh, pretty well, apart from my leg, you see, which I'm having trouble with now. But there again, I was glad enough to get back to sea after, 7 months. They wanted to send me back into hospital again. That's when I got my draft sheet to the ship again, because I didn't want to go back in hospital. And I suppose that the feeling at the time was that you were doing your bit, and my bit was going to sea. I suppose there were people who had different ideas, but
And what about your psychological condition after the Curaçao sinking?
You didn't have time for any psychological effects. I don't know, I think it's a malaise nowadays. Everybody's trying to get counselling and getting some more money for things. So I don't know whether our generation was totally different to what they are now, but I couldn't think that any of our lads suffered any mental disorders of any description. The only time anybody showed any mental, well, not mental, but frightened was one time when we were being bombed in the Mediterranean, and I had a lad as a telegraph operator in the wheelhouse, and he was crouched in the corner of it when they were bombing. I must admit, he'd never been under fire before. And not that that made any difference. We'd not been under fire before when we went to Norway.
Did you have any sympathy for him?
I gave him a tot of rum.